The Disruption, a lively discussion between UVA Darden School of Business professors Yael Grushka-Cocaine and Mike Lennox on cutting-edge technologies and practices that are challenging the status quo.
Good day, Yael.
Good afternoon, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm very excited about today's episode because this is a very special episode.
This is
our one-year podcasting anniversary episode.
Woohoo! Ironically, isn't one-year anniversary like paper or something very low-tech?
Oh, I have no idea.
I think it is.
I know it's not like diamonds or gold or anything exciting like that. So, all right, this is our paper anniversary
here.
Maybe
I'm wrong, but yeah. Yes.
Actually, that might be a good disruption question. Paper, good disruption, bad disruption,
Ooh,
or no disruption?
Fantastic question.
Yeah, we'll go back in history and ask these questions.
Yes.
But instead, what we've decided to do today is revisit the topics that we've already talked about and see if we have any updates, any changes even in opinion. God knows I've changed my opinion on some of these issues on even in the one podcast we were filming it there. But today, I thought we'd break it down slightly differently than the order that we did it in, since some of these topics are clearly related. So to start, I wanted to tackle three of them that we both agreed were good disruptions, three of them that I think have some really interesting social impact, and maybe we'll just discuss again if there's any updates we have. So the first one I wanted to talk about was the idea of the virtual workplace here.
Ooh.
This idea that we are moving away from the old idea of having to show up in the office 5 days a week, and that people are working from home, they're using Zoom. Any updates to your thought on this?
Well, I do think that we've seen a lot happen in the past year since we had Roshni here as our guest. I think by and large, it seems to me like on one hand, on surface, not much has changed, meaning still companies kind of splitting their time and their profiles and employees kind of all over the map in terms of their habits. Some go in every day, some work 5 days at home. But I have seen quite a few articles about companies that made complete shifts. So some CEOs, either newly appointed CEOs or leaders, come in and make a dramatic kind of declaration around a change in strategy. And that seems to have mixed reactions. And so we're seeing leaders themselves kind of debate where they want to be on that spectrum. That's what I've noticed since, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to think about it, that the momentum behind you have to be in the office has been broken and probably won't ever come back to that extreme, but where is the balance for how much virtual work is still very much up to debate. There was an interesting article by Nicholas Bloom, Stanford economist, talking about some of the data they have on what's just happening on the ground. And he made the interesting observation that this seems like it is real, it's persistent, and there's reasons to believe that this will continue, that there are economic incentives for allowing your workforce, especially in certain types of jobs, to work at least somewhat from home. So I think, I think we're still on good footing here, that this is a disruption and it will continue to be. And, hopefully it will be a good one like we originally thought there.
Well, it's interesting because I'm the next generation of graduates coming out of colleges, the next generation of employees are being recruited by these firms. And it's interesting to see how folks think about the location of the work and the modality of the work as something that they take into consideration in their many criteria when choosing a job. Okay. I've seen individuals reject jobs. I've seen folks kind of change their thinking about an opportunity based on whether or not it was remote or in the office. In both directions, some people are craving that social aspect and want a vibrant office kind of setting, and some folks are a little bit more skeptical. But it's on folks' radar. They're assessing it as part of the consideration, and they're trying to make good choices accordingly. I don't know that we've necessarily seen complete structures of organizations change yet. The real estate part of things is still up in the air in terms of are all headquarters disappearing? Is there still a gravitas for having some kind of really fancy headquarters? Not clear if that's going to really continue in that direction. And I'm always think about Infinite Loop, Apple's office. I think they're one that actually asks people to go into the office, interestingly. So,
Well, yeah, we could have a whole another discussion about commercial real estate. Good disruption, bad disruption, or no disruption.
Yes.
But there's clearly a lot going on there. Well, let's keep moving on. One of our other topics was personalized health.
Yep.
Leveraging technology to, customize your healthcare. Again, we both kind of favored a good disruption there. Anything new to report there?
Not much new to report. I feel like ironically, maybe not ironically, but I feel like this is one that is playing out slower than maybe some areas that we've seen kind of exponential game-changing activity. Maybe because it's health, things take a slightly different pace. Folks need to be more careful. There's a lot more kind of checks and balances along the way. There's a lot more intervention by authorities and regulatory bodies that it will play out over time and things are happening. It's just not as immediate as maybe we see in other domains.
Yeah, and I think that's right. This is one that's going to have a long gestation here. And we'll see it in meaningful ways when you interface with the health system in certain ways, but maybe not fully appreciated by those of us just in kind of the general public.
Right, exactly right. Exactly right. But I believe that the general approach and insight from around or adjacent to those experts is that everybody's keenly looking at it and hopeful that it will yield superior outcomes for all of us.
Yeah, so, one hopes. Yeah. Another one near and dear to our hearts. Ooh. Online learning.
Online learning.
We both said
yes.
Good disruption. I will point out that when we recorded this one,
yes,
it was before the release of a little thing called ChatGPT.
Ooh.
And the whole fascination with large language models that we have seen over the last year. Does that change? Does it change your assessment here of online learning?
No, not much. I think that industry has stabilized somewhat. There's been some consolidation in terms of the large venues. There's been some slowdown in terms of the number of new players in the space, and so more predictability in terms of who's trying and who's experimenting with online learning, what are the main vendors, what are the types of services that they provide. I will say that one of the biggest changes that I've noticed in the space of online learning is that actually we see more regulation coming out. We've seen the Department of Education being pretty clear in terms of expectations around contract sharing and disclosures and the like, which may curtail some of the efforts that some of the for-profit companies are putting in. So that's going to be interesting to see. We always bring it up that aside from the technology, the adopters, and the financials and the economics of a certain disruption, the regulatory bodies have a lot to say and a lot of control in the matters.
Yeah, this is one where, as you know, I've been getting excited about the potential, especially of large language models, to create robust asynchronous learning environments. So the idea would be, could you create, a chatbot who could mimic some of the experience one might have in a Socratic classroom?
Right.
And as I mentioned during that podcast,
don't say it because somebody might take it and we want to patent it.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, yes. Well, everything here is, confidential.
But, to our listeners.
Yeah.
Yes.
But again, I want to emphasize the point that I don't see this as a pure substitute for what we do in the classroom here. It's a complement and it's just another modality which you can enhance someone's learning. The beauty of it, though, is with asynchronous, if you could really pull this off, is it's a scalability again, that you could be having, thousands, if not millions of students run through a fairly robust Socratic exchange, but in an asynchronous environment. So that to me is a game changer in terms of the scalability of some of the stuff we do.
And maybe this is where our disruptions collide. And like anything, many of our disruptions on their own are slightly weakened by, or compared to the thought of all of these disruptions occurring simultaneously, we see the true potential here. So if you take a ChatGPT or any large language model and do an enterprise version and customize it to, for instance, the Darden case collection in our videos, you could quickly see how you could train it to do exactly what you're saying. Ask the more Socratic, sophisticated, detailed questions and really build some history there.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll have jobs in the future. That's the key here.
We will orchestrate on all of these, automatic bot-based Socratic instructors.
Exactly, yes. Exactly. All right, let's move on. We had a cluster of those technologies that are broadly in what we might call clean tech. In particular, we talked about electric vehicles, renewable energy, and clean meat. And in all three cases, again, we're both kind of optimistic and see them as good disruptions here. Any updates on any three of these that you want to share?
Well, you are a big supporter and fan, and I think we all knew that going in, and we definitely got confirmation during our episode with Adam around your support of EVs, of electric vehicles, and your belief that that's the way forward. And I don't think that that's changed dramatically, although I will say that it feels to me from what I've been reading and noticing is that the enthusiasm has, again, tempered a bit or maybe calmed down a little bit or been curtailed. I don't know if it's due specifically to various attentions that Elon Musk as a person is drawing and critique of his other activities. I don't know if it's the sense that the world after COVID was left with other supply chain challenges that, again, are limiting some of the development that is expected or the delays in terms of developing some of the battery capabilities. But it seems to me like it hasn't continued in the same growth patterns that it was a few years ago. And that, of course, can change in a matter of a few years.
Well, actually, I'm going to bring data to bear on
this one. Okay, please,
so,
please.
It actually is continuing to increase. And so
In the same rate?
So maybe not quite the exponential growth that we were hoping, but at the same time, we went from 15% new vehicle sales to 20% this year. And that's somewhere close to 15 million new vehicles on the road that are EVs. So it still has that nice upward increasing trajectory there. So I remain optimistic on this one. If you look at things like charging infrastructure, that also is going through kind of an exponential growth curve. But I agree. I mean, nothing is guaranteed. I do worry about the politicalization of the technology.
So again, you mean the role of the regulatory bodies?
Well, I'm actually thinking more of the consumer that it will signal something about your beliefs by buying electric vehicles. Because my whole argument is that people are going to start buying these because they're cheaper, better, and regardless if you care about climate change or the like. But if it's viewed as a negative to your persona, that's going to be problematic and could likely, you know, slow it down.
What has been the impact? So what we have seen happen, and we haven't recorded that episode yet, although I know that it's on our docket to do in just a few weeks. But what has been the impact in your mind to autonomous vehicles?
Yeah.
We've seen more cities, I think San Francisco, I think other places have really gone or taken it more seriously and really invested in certain services that are now provided by autonomous vehicles without drivers or driverless cars. Does that support the whole electric vehicle effort? Is it totally separate momentum? Tell us what you're thinking about.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to do an episode on autonomous vehicles coming up here. But again, there is a lot of reasons to believe that if you're going to build an autonomous vehicle, an electric vehicle is the platform to do it on, partly because of the electric infrastructure that you have in an EV. And there's even things like charging. It's easier to think of autonomous charging than it is autonomous putting gas in a tank. So I think for a variety of reasons, you'll see these two disruptions kind of move together. How about clean meat? You know, that's a Becky, our lead researcher here, is a big enthusiast.
She
here.
Is. She is.
Are we making any progress on it?
Not that I can tell, but I must profess that this is not my my area of excitement necessarily. I'm not rushing to the supermarkets to look for it. Yeah. I know that the conversations have evolved. I know that discussions have continued to push towards opportunities to not only think about alternatives to meat, but also alternatives to the infrastructure that we have to get us the meat.
Yeah.
I just don't know that folks are quite trusting of the lab-based creations quite yet.
Yeah, and I think this is a classic example of the S-curve, which we talk about frequently, that clearly we are not in the exponential growth phase in terms of adoption of clean meat. We're still in that, what we call era of ferment, no pun intended in this particular case, in clean meat, and a lot still remains to be seen. But like many...
So maybe it's a no disruption, or do you think still
I don't think I'd be ready to say that. I mean, I think that's the question, right? It's still up for debate whether this truly reaches its full potential or it becomes just this footnote with no disruption.
Maybe you can share a little bit how you think about, not everything will be assessed kind of, assessed ex post, but like what are some signposts or some things to keep an eye out as we try to assess a technology and understand, assess a disruption?
Well, I think almost in all of these, you know, you look at the cost curve.
Okay.
So are we going to see, and we would need to see significant reductions in the cost of the production of clean meat. You know, the first hamburgers that came out were like $100,000 a hamburger. Like no one's obviously paying that. So look at cost curves. And are we moving down a cost curve in a way that this could reach prime time here?
Okay.
Well, let's keep moving on. The next group that we had, this is my favorite of our discussion so far.
Oh, wait, but before that, we didn't do a renewable
energy. Oh, okay. Anything on renewables? You know, I think I would just simply say that kind of as we discussed, we are moving down this cost curve. There's a lot of energy, again, no pun intended, of adopting renewable energy. At the same time, there are still a lot of barriers in terms of, you know, grid infrastructure, battery technology for storage as we get more renewables on the grid. So there's still a long path here, but I think we're still on that trajectory.
I definitely don't want to get us down a political track, but I will ask, has there been any impact on, let's say, the war in between Ukraine and Russia on the development for or the adoption of clean energy?
Well, I mean, I think a couple things. I'm trying to remember if we had talked much about like the Inflation Reduction Act in the United States, but it has a huge surge of investment in this industry sector. So that's obviously fueling, again, no pun intended, investment in this area. Clearly, the macroeconomic events and the impacts on things like the price of oil also change the dynamics here that we would favor. And I think especially the idea of energy independence, which we have in the United States, largely arguably through fracking, but Europe in particular is looking at the situation they found themselves in with natural gas and Russia and are thinking much more aggressively about, all right, we do not want to be in this situation again. And so I think renewables are a logical one for them to be pursuing to try to get some of that energy independence, if you will.
Perfect. Great.
All right. So the next three are triumphant of cryptocurrency, metaverse, and NFTs. And I'm just going to brag right now because I think we called the cryptocurrency crash before it occurred. I think we recorded that one. We were right at the height of cryptocurrency.
Yep.
As I shared on a later podcast, I think we caused the whole crash because
we were
people listened to our podcast and realized that there was really no disruption here. In all seriousness, you know, we have the FTX trial going on right now. The repercussions of our cryptomania are being felt. Want to be very clear, when I say no disruption, I'm talking about technological shifts and change. This has been incredibly disruptive to a lot of people and a lot of their savings and the like. And in that way, cryptocurrency absolutely has been disruptive. But again, I still thinking to my thinking that cryptocurrency has a place in the world. It is likely to be small. It is not this transformative technology that the crypto enthusiasts have been arguing.
So potentially, maybe not necessarily. I mean, there is disruption, but potentially it will quiet down and just become an additional type of investment and an additional type of asset, and not necessarily replace what people are doing in terms of their currency and how they think about their monetary positioning. Has it been used for anything good? The infrastructure.
Well, that's a great question. Well, as we talked about, I guess there are various places in the world where maybe hedging your current currency with crypto could be the most logical. Though again, the U.S. dollar seems to be typically that default currency for people. So,
what about the DAO as an idea? The idea of more less centralized kind of groups, but decentralization of authorities. What about that? Is that going to pick up in maybe a different domains?
Maybe. When that relates, let's talk about NFTs,
yes,
where I actually came in good disruption here. And so NFTs in some ways are the opposite of cryptocurrencies because these are exclusive assets. It's interesting that the excitement around them seems to have died down now. But I think the fundamental idea that you should be able to own a digital asset still resonates with me. Like, there should be a way to own digital assets and trade them, and NFTs are a logical technology to allow for that.
I think the hype is for sure curtailed. Like, it's not where it was even a year ago. It's not where it was even 6 months ago, I don't think. So it's interesting to see how some items of disruption are more of a fad, if you will, and they kind of find their natural kind of positioning.
That's right.
I like the idea of thinking about NFTs and making sense of them and owning digital assets, as you say, in the context of the metaverse, because it all made sense when we got to the metaverse episode.
Yeah.
Why get these digital assets? It's nice to have things that are digital and that we can kind of own them in this kind of hypothetical world, but only when you think about the metaverse as a thing that you're going to invest in, an environment that you're going to kind of invest in and create an alternative experience.
Right. And we were both skeptical about the metaverse, especially the idea of it being this single, all-encompassing oasis, as they called it in Ready Player One. I'm sticking with that assessment, that there's lots of pieces of this. There's lots of uses of virtual reality in these virtual environments that are incredibly helpful and a positive disruption. But I don't think the metaverse, as maybe envisioned by Meta and others, is coming anytime soon. I do think it's interesting the hype cycles we see. And you know, we're in the generative AI hype cycle right now. And I don't find many people talking about the metaverse at all. And I, you know, is Zuckerberg going to change Meta now to like AI-verse or something? You know, like, you know, going to change the name again to meet the latest fad. I do think it highlights one of the kind of hearts of what we're trying to do with this podcast, which is separate out the longer term trends and the impacts these technologies can have from the short term mania. And this is a good one, but not clear that this is going to be that transformative impact that we thought.
Again, the hope for me is in the intersection. So intersectionality between metaverse and, say, generative AI.
Yeah.
I can imagine, I've been thinking a lot, actually, most of the conversations with you around training our faculty and thinking about educational experiences for our students and learning opportunities and having simulations and dimensions of our learning that right now we either need real resources like actors and theaters and props and investments to accomplish. I thought we could do that in the metaverse. Practice firing somebody or hiring somebody or promoting someone. Have our students practice tough conversations in the metaverse. And if you have a generative AI that could interact with our students in the metaverse and they're now CEOs of companies in the metaverse, we can really push the limits of how we teach our students.
And again, you know, I'm all for VR and the impacts that could have in these virtual worlds. I just don't think there's going to be one all-incorporating metaverse here. Could be proven wrong, of course. All right, well, that's a good segue to our last group. So we've clearly been talking a lot about generative AI. We've talked it in the context of music. We've talked it in the context of deep fakes and the misuse of generative AI. We've more recently talked about it in terms of what's happening in the entertainment industry, especially around what the writer's strike and the actor's strike. Where do you fall? Where do you fall? And I have to say, this is the one that the both of us have been a little wishy-washy on. We've been kind of all over the map in our responses to what we think generative AI is going to do here.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I think I changed my position depending on the type of application. And maybe if I step back and say, across all industries, big picture here, generative AI, large language models, is it a disruptor? I think it is a disruptor. Yeah. It's a disruptor not only for the tech itself and what it can do, but for me, it's more of a disruptor because it seems like everybody's paying attention. Yeah. So for those of us playing around with data science or implementing solutions related to using data in new creative ways and solving, you know, new problems and creating new products, I feel like now everybody's paying attention and it's partly thanks to these types of models.
Yeah, I'm right with you here too. I think this is my point again about, you know, there are the hype cycles and clearly we're in it right now. And I will make the bold forecast that we're going to see at some point here a massive shakeout where a lot of these AI startups and AI initiatives go away. And that, by the way, is what we expect when we get disruption. But I think there's enough corpus here of a really disruptive technology that we're going to see it proliferate through a wide number of industries, despite there being a lot of churn here. The part I think I struggle with is the good versus the bad question here. And be very clear, there are applications of generative AI that are going to be very helpful in advance and solve problems we face in the world. But we all see the downside. And as we've talked about in some of the discussions we've had on this, there are increasing calls to regulate AI. And I have to say, I don't know what that means.
I don't think that is going to happen.
And it feels good to say it, like we need to regulate AI, but you know, what does that mean? And how can it actually be meaningful and impactful while not also killing the good side of the disruption as well? I wish I had answers for our listeners, but I really don't.
Perhaps a more helpful way to think about it is once we changed our mindset from trying to control the AI and the usages of AI versus putting in place certain mechanisms to protect the people.
Yeah.
And so the regulatory authorities, the bodies, the folks that are concentrating on putting the boundaries and the limitations and the guardrails, maybe it would be more productive if we shift the conversation to say, what is it that we care about in terms of the people, those who are performing the jobs, those that we're worried that will be out of the jobs or be replaced or are struggling to train? What is it that we need to do to ensure the welfare of us all and the world of tomorrow, knowing that it will be very hard, as you say, to limit the usage of the technology itself?
And this is, you know, I'm going to make an advocacy actually for the lawyers here, surprisingly, which is sometimes just...
we don't always do that at business schools.
assigning liability. So you think about autonomous vehicles. How can we regulate autonomous vehicles? Well, maybe it's as simple as the maker of the AI is going to be ultimately responsible for it and can be sued when things go wrong. Might get the incentives aligned correctly so that we get good AI, if you will, and get a good disruption there.
I'm excited about generative AI. I'm excited because it feels like it's forcing many people to think really outside the box. And that's refreshing. Typically, we're all too prone for more incremental kind of small changes over time. And there's enough problems, as we've highlighted week in, week out in our episodes, that there's enough things that we need to change and improve in this world, and we don't have time to waste. So why not hope that with these models, we can actually tackle big problems like climate change or like, you know, poverty and health issues. Maybe there's a way for us to actually overcome. And if we win any of those domains, I think we'll be in a much better position.
I love your optimism. I define myself as an optimist. I think only in comparison to you am I like the cynic on this podcast here. But I love that vision. And I do agree, you know, the engineer at heart in me wants to like figure out how can we leverage technology to solve our problems. So I have one last question for
yes.
you. 1 year anniversary.
Yes.
The Good Disruption podcast. Good disruption, bad disruption, or no disruption?
Oh, I actually am so glad that you asked, because I wanted to point this out from the get-go. For me personally, like maybe predictably, it's a great disruption.
Oh, not even a good one. It's a great disruption.
I really enjoyed these sessions when you and I first chatted. I knew I wanted to do a podcast. Talking about disruptions, I wasn't sure how I felt about it, but I learned so much from being in the studio, and I don't know if this is happening to you, but every time we record a new episode, for at least 1 or 2 weeks afterwards, everywhere I go, I bring up points that came up in our conversation, and actually longer term, probably. It keeps coming back and into conversations. Just this week, I went to a big conference that I go to every year, and I could reference the conversation that we had just last week around issues related to copyright and the like and the actor strike in Hollywood. And so not only do I feel like I learn from it, I think it's great to have experts and guests, and it always is nice to hear just how deep their knowledge is and how much they're helping us, and learning to ask the right questions around disruption.
I totally agree, and I think that last point is critical. I was doing a panel last week, and someone introduced me as a futurist. I'm like, I am absolutely not a futurist. I'm the first one to tell you, I have no clue often like where technology would be, other than to predict it's probably going to be radically different than we can even forecast it, you know, 10 years from now. But I do think there are ways in which we can be thoughtful about thinking about technology and how it's evolving and what the implications are, both good and bad. And to your point about our experts, you know, having conversations with people, talking through these issues, getting that expert opinion, and then asking questions. That, I think, you know, you summarized it well. Like, that's the heart of what this podcast is about. I suspect we're going to be wrong on a whole bunch of these forecasts that we're making, and that's okay, because that's the nature of technology. Mm-hmm. But in many times, it's just having the conversation and dealing and with the implications of technology that I think is the important thing to do.
Yeah, I noticed that in our title, we don't have bad disruption. Our title is just good disruption. So that in and of itself kind of summarizes how I feel about our podcast. And I do think that our listeners also, and you guys have been great reaching out and sharing with us what you learned. I do feel like folks listen for the dialogue and for the exchange of thoughts, not necessarily for the prediction.
So, that's
as much as I'm a forecaster.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, what are some episodes as we wrap up to look forward to in the next year? What do you think we're going to be talking about?
Oh, well, I mean, we have talked about, you know, a number here. I definitely want to talk about nuclear energy.
Okay.
And in particular, there's a movement towards what we call modular nuclear, it's like small nuclear reactors. So that one excites me. How about about you? What do you have on the
well, forecast? We mentioned the autonomous vehicles. Yeah. Funny enough, when we started working on this, it was on the list all along, and I was less excited. You know, we've been both following what's going on in Waymo and talking about, you know, Google cars, if you will, when it way back when. And a few years ago, there was a big hype, maybe 5-6 years ago, when we just started to kind of identify this as an area. I was a little reluctant and maybe less enthusiastic. I thought the time has passed, but I'm excited. Again, I'm seeing more and more investment. Airports investing in autonomous vehicles to take passengers from train stations to the airports. Huge amounts of money being put into it, and it's interesting that I don't know that everybody agrees that it's worth it or what the promise is, and I think that there's a lot to debate there.
Well, at least two episodes that we have coming up, and we're going to try to increase our rate of production here in year two.
And so, I think just to get people excited again, a couple of others that are top of mind for me. One has to do with the new technology related to fashion.
Oh yes.
So we haven't really talked much about it, but it's a huge industry with a lot of disruption actually occurring.
So it's just like fast fashion, or
no, not fast fashion necessarily. It could be high-end fashion, but new materials, new way to design them, 3D printing, really new ways to imagine what they're made out of, yeah, and how they're made. And also just different ways to use crowds. I think that we're going to be talking a little bit about some technology related to using crowds and crowdsourcing workforce in the future.
If only we had an expert on the podcast who knows a lot about crowdsourcing.
I don't know.
Well, to our listeners out there, if you have suggestions, please, send them to us. We're always looking for, interesting topics. The world moves fast, so we can be, hopefully flexible and respond to some of these evolving technologies as they come. And some of them will probably be fast, and some will be transformative. And that's the whole point of this podcast. So Yael, it's been an absolute joy. Let me give our thanks as always to Becky, our researcher extraordinaire, who this podcast would not be possible without her. And Gary, of course, our producer, who keeps us in line. And he promises me, we're going to get this AI generated music, sooner or later.
It's the jingle. We're here for the jingle.
We need the jingle. Yeah. We need the jingle.
Thank you, Mike.
Good Disruption is a podcast from the University of Virginia Darden School of Business.